Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
High atop the San Francisco skyline, this is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
Great to have you back on the Damon Bruce Show. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Nate Burleson is joining us here. He's now an NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter and, of course, see him on NFL Total Access after an 11-year NFL career. Very happy to talk a little football with Nate Burleson. Good to have you on, Nate. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. Let's start with the most important question. How was the turkey? Did you carve it up like a soft secondary?
I like that. I see what you did there. Yeah, you know, it was good. I had all my family, you know, in town, and the wife and her mother really got down in the kitchen. I had seconds, you know, a nap before the second plate, which
Smart.
Is how everybody should do it, just so you can gear yourself up for the second half, if you will.
Pacing,
but yeah, it was a great day. And it was great football. How about that? Three games, good food, just, you know, every football fan's dream.
It really was. It's my favorite holiday. Now, when the Burlesons gather, what's the head count?
Oh, it's deep. I mean, we're looking, you know, almost 20-plus people. You know, I invite everybody from, you know, the close family, the intermediate, to friends and associates that I know. It's just an open household, open door policy. If you don't have a place to eat, you're always invited over my place. That's how I grew up, and that's how I live now as an adult.
Very nice. So you need an all-22 cam to get that table in there.
You definitely do. Hey, you're coming with the analogies right now. I'm digging it.
Nate, it's good to have you on, man. I want to talk to you a little bit about the last time you saw the Raiders and Chiefs play a game that actually meant something in the month of December. And, I mean, I don't know what playoff picture the Raiders should be thinking about. Jack Del Rio, yeah, he said all the right things at the beginning of the year. Wants to talk about a division. Boy, it looks like the Broncos division. But this is a young, up-and-coming team with a bright future and a chance to actually appear in playoff focus with a win over the Chiefs, and a lot of work to do after that. But it's been a long time since they played a game that meant something in December. That's progress right there. It's baby steps.
100%. You know, and you can phrase it however you want, but you have to give credit where credit's due. I think first and foremost, when you were talking about the Raiders in the preseason, most people who are familiar with the team, you know, you automatically give them an out and say, okay, well, we're somewhat rebuilding. We have the pieces. We just want our team to play hard, be competitive in most games, and go out there and show us that we're headed in the right direction, like you said. But it's much more than that. At this point in the season, just for you to be in the conversation, to be in the hunt, to have a chance, it speaks volumes about, one, the organization and, you know, what they've done in the draft and also in free agency. And that's what makes me excited. You know, being a fan of the game now that I'm removed from it, looking at that offense and Derek Carr and what he's able to do and showing flashes of, to be honest, you know, having that great moxie that not a lot of quarterbacks have and really something you can't coach. And, you know, I got a close friend, Todd Downing, who's one of the coaches on the staff, who's most likely going to be a tremendous offense coordinator in this league someday. And he gives me the inside scoop. He says, Nate, you know, these guys are young, they're fast, they're explosive. They remind me of, you know, 2004, Dante Culpepper, Randy Moss, Nate Burleson, you know, Ontario Smith, where, you know, we were just out there trying to light up the scoreboard. We weren't concerned about what defense you were giving us. We weren't concerned about who was on the other side of the field. We knew that we had one of the most explosive offenses in the league week in and week out. And I guarantee that's what these Raiders are thinking. And I love that. You got to have that type of confidence, especially if you have that technology.
Nate Burleson from the NFL Network here on 95.7 The Game. And, you know, I think the Raiders are a pass-first football team, and they should be passing first earlier in their series of downs. How do you get a little less predictable on first and second down while staying true to your running game and trying to find a balance? I mean, this is a like you said, this is a team that can really throw it around. They got legitimate targets out there, and I think they sometimes get trapped running first, second down, putting their quarterback in third and long too often.
You know, sometimes in this league, coaches can out-coach themselves. You know, you're trying to play chess. So when you're playing chess, it's all about anticipating your opponent's next move. So because teams are going in defensively knowing just how powerful and potent this Oakland Raiders offense can be, maybe the assumption is when you're creating a game plan offensively for the Raiders, well, let's just run the ball because they're expecting us to pass. So let's come out the gate, let's force the ball on the ground, and let's try to move the sticks and make our third down, second and third down manageable. But for me, the more successful teams that I played on throughout my career, we didn't care. We didn't care what we thought you were going to do. We wanted you to make the adjustment. I always felt like it works against you. When you adjust differently, that doesn't suit your strength before you even get out there. If you're good at something, be good at it. Plan on doing that and implement that within the game plan, and you force the other team to adjust. And that should be a weekly thing. Now, if you go out there, you pass, and defensively they got your number, then okay, let's readjust on the sideline, and now let's incorporate the run game. But for me, if I'm the Oakland Raiders offense, every week within those first 15 plays that every team has when they draw up at the beginning of every game, it should be majority heavy pass. Put that pressure on defenses. Put them on their heels. If they want to blitz, okay, we got a quarterback that can get the ball out of his hand quickly, and we got receivers that can catch and run and we'll get an end zone. If they want to give me time, then we have a quarterback that has composure, and he's going to sit back, go through his progressions, and check down if he has to. And that's the luxury they have with the quarterback and those skill players surrounding him.
Nate Burleson, one of the co-hosts of the R&B podcast with Michael Robinson. You can catch that on NFL.com, iTunes, and YouTube. Got to ask you about Amari Cooper, because this rookie wide receiver has been playing like a Pro Bowler for most of the season. A lot of people said rookie wall when he didn't have a very good game against Detroit. Really nice bounce back performance last week against Tennessee. You were a rookie wide receiver. When did you hit a wall? And what do you think of the way Amari Cooper's running through it?
He's done everything that anybody who knows football and watched him play expected him to do. You know, I remember being a rookie, and, you know, I didn't really hit the wall until the offseason. You know, once my first year finally hit and I got to relax a little bit, I quickly realized that I can't relax for too long, and I'm not on a vacation. I'm just on a break from my job. And once I got back into training, I thought, whew, this came around a lot sooner than expected. I'm still feeling the bumps and bruises from this past season. So luckily, I didn't hit it during the year, and I was playing with Randy Moss. So he did all the heavy lifting my rookie season. But when you look at Amari Cooper, you know, one of the first things that you noticed when he came out of college was that he reminded you of a veteran wide receiver. You know, there's a lot of compliments we can give guys when they're coming out of college at the wide receiver position. You know, you get the, oh, he's a speedster, one of the fastest in the league. Or you get, oh, he's very tall. You know, he can high point the ball in the end zone. You know, or you get, oh, well, he's a really good route runner, and he's going to be one of our better route runners. And there's always these titles and labels that we give receivers. But what we did with Amari is we gave him all of them. And then on top of that, we said, well, he walks like a veteran, talks like a veteran, and he approaches the game like a veteran. I remember we did a talk back with him here at the network on Total Access, and it was just me and him. And I said, well, how do you feel about these comparisons? You know, you're the first rookie to do this. You're the first rookie to do that. The only other guys in this name are Randy Moss, and I'm giving him all this credit, complimenting him like crazy and patting him on his back. I said, well, what keeps you from becoming complacent? And it was a very simple answer. And as you know, he doesn't like to talk much. He just kind of paused for a second and said, because I haven't really done anything. And, you know, that blew me away. For, you know, me being a veteran, a guy, I prided myself in just hard work. You know, I was going to outwork the guy who was in front of me, outwork the guy trying to get my position. So that's how I thought. I always felt like I didn't do anything. So it was a constant motivation within myself. So for me to hear such a young, talented wide receiver say that, it really spoke more about him than the routes he runs.
Yeah.
It tells me that this young man is not just a flash in the pan. He's going to last a long time.
No, there's not a lot of diva in Amari Cooper, that's for sure. We got Nate Burleson from the NFL Network here on the Damon Bruce Show. And I want to jog you back. 2005, you got a Vikings team with Dante Culpepper that starts 2-5. He goes down with an injury, and in comes Brad Johnson. You finish the season 9-7. Now, that was an injury that made the quarterback switch happen, and obviously the 49ers, even though Colin Kaepernick was hurt, there really was no injury that made that switch happen. Blaine Gabbert seemed predestined to take over here. And even though he's 1-2, they've definitely moved the ball better. I think they should feel a little bit better about themselves offensively, given all the other problems and the lack of depth in the backfield right now. We've seen quarterback changes divide a locker room. Have you ever seen a quarterback change bring a locker room back together? Could that maybe be what helps the Niners through the rest of this year?
Well, you know, I think with this situation, you have to look at the number one guy. That's the glue that holds it all together. However he acts, that's going to be the temperament of the team. So in my situation, when Dante Culpepper went down, he brought the team together. He didn't have any ill feelings. He wasn't frustrated with the fact that Brad was coming in. He was mad that he was injured, and that was his only gripe with the situation. After that, he was the same leader. So for us, we all came together because there was overwhelming support from Dante for his backup. Now in the situation in San Francisco, I can't speak for what's going on within the locker room, but I would have to ask and pose this question, how is Kaepernick taking it, and how is he being supportive within the situation? Because it's just like any other family, and don't get it misunderstood. Every team is a family, and sometimes when you put that jersey on, you know, you're dedicating yourself to a group of men for at least one season, so you're not always going to be on the same page. But what you can do is make sure we have the same goal and everybody's on the same boat. But if you have one guy who says, you know what, I'm about to detach on this lifeboat and I'm going to head in the other direction and swim to shore or row to shore, then you know that one guy is trying to, one, divide himself, but also maybe pull some other guys off the boat.
Always interesting stuff, man, about how locker rooms come together and how they function. You know, sometimes teams, they just got to blow off some steam. Being a former Viking, I hope you don't mind me asking you. You ever been to a Lake Minnetonka party? I heard Lake Minnetonka parties don't stop.
Yeah, Lake Minnetonka parties get a lot of people in trouble. that's for sure. You know, but here's the crazy part a lot of people don't know is that there were two boats out on that lake. And luckily, you know, I made the right decision to get on the smaller boat that wasn't as chaotic. So we were just doing some gambling and drinking and eating. So it was a few guys that kind of caused somewhat of a ruckus, which, you know, made that whole situation a lot more exaggerated than it really was. But let's just say this. I didn't go back out to Lake Minnetonka the rest of my career in Minnesota.
Nate Burleson with some great stuff here on 95.7 The Game. Towards the end of your career, you signed with the Browns. You didn't play for them. I think you both looked at each other and said, nah, let's not do this. Did you see a snake bit franchise when you looked at the Cleveland Browns?
No, I didn't see a snake bitten franchise. You know, I saw a franchise that was rebuilding, and I thought that, you know, it was a great decision for me to go there. I actually chose Cleveland over Miami, and I thought, you know, if there's one team out of the two that's heading in the right direction right now, in my opinion, it was Cleveland. And then I went out there and refreshed my arm and tore my hamstring. And, you know, they said to me, look, we got these young guys that we have to evaluate.
Yeah.
You know, if we keep you and you're, you know, hampered with a hamstring for 4 weeks, financially it's not a smart move. I'm a grown man. I've been in this league a long time. I said, you know what, I agree. And I sat in that room and talked with Ray Farmer, the man who just released me, and went over who I liked at the wide receiver position. And, you know, I remember him saying, well, a lot of guys wouldn't do this. I said, well, a lot of guys don't understand the business. I mean, you guys have been nothing but great to me here. And I get it. If I was making decisions and I had a suit on and a 33-year-old receiver was banged up and couldn't make it through the summer, then, you know, you gotta have a reality check and say, you know, we got these young guys that are cheaper. We have to evaluate, and we're going to make a decision based off that. Speaking about the young guys that they have to evaluate, Johnny Manziel was one of them.
Cool.
And he was a guy that initially you might assume that he wasn't in the playbook as much as he should have been. You know, he would show flashes of really savvy plays. I mean, some of those highlight spectacular moments we were accustomed to seeing in college. But then he would make your rookie mistakes. And I just chalked it up to just rookie mistakes. And then, you know, I think once the season started and he actually got a shot in the game, I think we all realized he wasn't prepared. Only Johnny could tell you if it was more physical or mental, or if he just wasn't ready for the speed of the game. Regardless, he just wasn't prepared. Last year, I still was one of those guys that would stand up on the couch and say, I believe in his talent. If he just gets it, if he gets how to take pieces of successful quarterbacks that have done it with the same skill set, i.e. a Russell Wilson, where, yes, I'm athletic. Yes, I can go out there and rush for 115 yards, but I'm not going to do that every game. I shouldn't do that every game. My first priority should be, one, taking care of the football, two, getting the ball out of my hands into the playmaker's hands. And then occasionally I'll do something spectacular if within that play it's called for. So that's what I've been promoting. And to be honest, I felt like that's what we saw this year. I mean, we saw Johnny play this year a lot better than we've seen before. Traditional quarterback play, dropping back, hitting receivers on a dime, you know, scrambling to the left side of the field, throwing across the body to the right. You know, he's shown what we brought him here to do, and that's quarterback play and more good than bad. Then he finds himself in a situation where during the bye week, somebody catches him on film and that get back to the coach. The demotion was surprising. I didn't think, you know, just that video warranted a guy to be demoted. For me, if a guy's making plays on the field, I can care less what you do in the offseason. Now, on your day off. Now, I get it. Everybody's going to say, well, Nate, it is Johnny. He was in rehab. And,
right.
You know, if he's in rehab, he shouldn't be around any place that, you know, could influence him to drink or get involved in anything. But the thing about the video is that he wasn't even drinking. And I'm not going to make no assumptions because I hate when people make assumptions.
Right.
About
you know, and I don't want to make any assumptions either. But look, we've seen a lot of guys pull the rehab card out because it's easy to play in the public domain. It's a PR move more than it's a real reality. And the news was coming down bad on him. And now he stands underneath that tent of, well, I might have a substance abuse problem. So being in a bar now is much different than the guy who was just in a bar on his bye week because of your past or what you said the problem was. And he has painted himself in a really bad corner. The Browns are in a bad corner because of it, and it's really something else. Look, Nate, we got to get running, man. I love talking with you. You're great on NFL Network. Did you ever think about going into player personnel, scouting, player development? Sounds like that would be right up your alley.
Yeah, you know, I actually thought about it. I had some opportunities actually to get into coaching, but the hours, they're just not what I need them to be. You know, I love my job here because I get time to spend with the family. But if I get back into an organization and start doing scouting or coaching, then we're talking about 12-hour days because I'm not going to do anything halfway. I'm going to have to be locked in. And it seems like right now I'd rather spend those quality moments with my kids who are, you know, 9, 11, and 5. And right now they need daddy to watch them run down the field and score touchdowns.
Hey, well, Nate, man, thank you very, very much. I really appreciate your time. Happy holidays to all of you and yours, and we'd love to talk to you again real soon. Thank you.
For sure. Thanks for having me on, fellas.
Great, great stuff. Nate Burleson, man. That was a great, man. Danny, we got to figure out a way to get him back on more often. Busta, San Jose, get them in a head coaching job. Awesome interview. I love the fact that he was willing to talk about his team, his time in the league, Lake Minnetonka. Kind of, he danced over that a little, which is probably smart to do. But it's official. We got ourselves a final 116-99 Warriors win, and Steph Curry was extraordinary. The last two players to have 6 40-point games in the season's first 20 games, here's the list. Steph Curry and Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan had 13 that entire year, and I would guarantee you that Michael Jordan didn't miss at least 10 solid fourth quarters yet. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I am starting to become more and more comfortable putting Curry and Jordan in the same sentence in terms of a performance over the course of a year. Curry's got 5 more championships to win. He's got a long way to go. He's got many MVPs and scoring titles and all that stuff to win and first team all NBAs. But in the vacuum of looking at something over a start to a season, yeah, this is Jordan-like. This is actually better than Jordan-like because, again, Michael had to play fourth quarter, four quarters to be Jordan. Curry plays so well, he's not even allowed to see the fourth quarter half the time. It is extraordinary. He had 28 points in the third quarter tonight. 24 consecutive Warrior points scored by him and him alone. It's really, really something else. The Warriors are 20-0, and it is time for us to finally say goodbye, Maroons.
Au revoir.
See ya, Maroons.
It's been real.
Get off the history book page. You're not there anymore. My darling Clementine never sounded sweeter. So there it is. The 1884 Maroons move over. No champagne popping for you. The Warriors have won 24 straight games dating back to last season. They're 20-0 thanks to this win tonight. And boy, did Steph Curry shoot the lights out on Del Curry night in Charlotte. By the way, Cam Newton was there wearing a Del Curry jersey. So all the stars in Charlotte came out tonight for this one. There was no doubt about it. It just sounds like an Elvis, My Darling Clementine. I expect him to be like dropping a little, like, you know, lemonade, the cool refreshing drink.
It's all the Maroons had. It's a little melancholic for them.
That's it.
We'll never speak of them again for any reason.
I would like to invite the 1884 Maroons, who played in the Union Association before it was even MLB. I'd like to congratulate the 1884 Maroons on their success back in 1884. But now it's time for you to exit stage left. Time for you to exit stage left. And you know who's going to be joining us? Stage right? Matt Stymietz. Matt Stymietz is here. We do a little dub post game when the Warriors go final. And guess what they have? And I believe Matt is on premises. So we are going to talk to him when he comes on next. And we are going to officially start the unofficial Dubs post game show. You know, I used to give real good postgame.
Did you know? You did.
I'm going to say best in city history.
Hey.
I'm like the sourdough bread of postgame hosts.
Claim it.
Can't have it without me. But now everyone does without me because I refuse to work at night. So let's do it. Let's get a little Warrior. Excuse me. Not allowed to say that contractually. Dubs postgame. We will talk into basketball. Our good friend Matt Stymietz is here. He watched the game a lot closer than I was able to because, you know, I'm hosting a show and everything for you. So we are going to get Stymietz's observations. We'll talk to him about what's happened tonight, what the future looks like for this team beyond very bright. It's unbelievable. The Golden State Warriors are 20-0. Beat it, Maroons. Beat it. Stick around. A very good half hour. Lots of Warrior talk. As a matter of fact, nothing but Warrior talk. Between now and 7 p.m., stay tuned. Enjoy the James Brown. Respect the James Brown. And then, Warriors for all.
Baby, the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Final buzzer blasts, and we're on it. It's time for Dubs postgame show on 95.7 The Game. Now, here's Chris Townsend and Matt Stymietz.
Well, you're going to get to Chris Townsend when the top of the hour comes around at 7 o'clock. Until then, it's one of those rare times where the Warriors wrap up while I'm still on the air. I'm thrilled to welcome in Matt Stymietz, who is your permanent host of the Dubs postgame show. I'm just going to fill in for Townsend here. How are you, buddy?
What's going on, man?
Good to see you, and it's good to see the Golden State Warriors. They're now 20-0. Just a couple of other notes about this game. Curry goes off with an epic third quarter, doesn't even play the fourth quarter. He scores 40. The Warriors have now begun this seven-game road trip, 2-0, and no one's ever gone 7-0 on the road in the NBA, not in history. So there is two streaks in play here. It's like a streak inception. And there's this. The Warriors now have won 77 in a row when leading by 15 points at any point in time during the game. And that is absolutely amazing. I said, if Christie Brinkley were in front of you all day long, eventually you just say, you know, yeah, she's beautiful. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'm tired. Like, can we bring up something else? Should we discuss the pimple that I see maybe on her face? And that's what this Warriors team is right now. They're impossible to criticize. It's impossible.
They really are. And there's, you can do one of two things. You can praise them till the cows come home, which you've got to do because they're 20-0. But the other thing that comes out of all this winning is you start to think, well, what do other teams have to do to beat the Warriors? And then you start saying things like, well, they need to try to do this or do more of this, or they got to try to shut this guy down. And then it comes across as, well, you hate the Warriors. You're trying to beat them. Or, you know, or no, you can't stop Steph Curry. Well, look, everybody tried to defend Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Michael Jordan, so he's no different in that regard. But at some point, somebody, an opposing coach or a team, is going to have to try to do something different. I guess that's what I'm saying, Damon, is with the exception of just a handful of games, two or three, the Pistons game comes to mind. These games are all looking very similar to me. They're looking like Steph Curry brings the ball up court. The other team takes the ball out of his hands, which everybody seems to be doing now. The ball goes to Draymond Green, and then Draymond Green has a party. And eventually Steph Curry gets back in on the party at the end of the possession for wide open threes. What I'm saying is I am not seeing opposing teams treat the Warriors and Steph Curry as seriously as I used to see teams treat Jordan and the Bulls, Magic and the Lakers,
right.
Bird and the Celtics. You're not going to beat this team with a ho-hum game plan or let's try to switch the high screen and roll and get a hand up on Curry's threes. He demands more than that.
I remember when you and I were talking last year. It was our Stymetrics conversation, if you will. And one of the things you brought up, and maybe you just did it tongue-in-cheek, but the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, that's not the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And since nothing is working, do something else. You said it's time to guard Steph Curry from behind. It's time to push him inside the three-point arc, because the more he backs up, the more accurate of a shot he has. Push him in there. Here's the thing. It doesn't – when you say – run him off the line.
Right.
You always mean backwards. In his case, right. Maybe it's forwards.
Well, I think there's so much going on here. And one is a generational thing. And it's Steph Curry can shoot the ball from 5 feet in back of that 3-point line. When kids grow up and they're learning how to quote unquote defend the three, if you're a defensive player, the first thing you do to defend a 3-point shooter is you look down at your feet to see where that line is.
Right.
And if that line is right in front of you, then you know,
you're defending
well,
it.
You can take away the three, assuming he's shooting the ball at the 3-point line. It's an instinct. It takes so much effort and focus to not do that, to be 5 feet beyond the 3-point line. Those are the things it's going to take. It's going to take habits to be broken, and maybe they can't be broken in a week or a month or 10 or 20 games. Maybe this is going to take years. In the meantime, the Warriors are going to go, you know, 69-13 or 67-15 or 72-10 in 3, 4, 5 consecutive years.
It's something
because they're
else.
Not going to start missing these shots. See,
right.
This is the other thing. Oh, they're a jump shooting team. They're a great jump shooting team, and they're getting open shots
right.
for the most part. So, look, Steph Curry right now, if you do the math, Damon, 55% of his shots are now three-pointers, and he's shooting 47% from three-point range. Until you do something about those numbers, you cannot right. beat the Golden State Warriors.
Right. You know, I mean, not to just bring it back to Indiana, which, by the way, has taken a 1-point lead over the Duke Blue Devils at Cameron Indoor Arena. Bob Knight would never allow anybody to shoot 55% from three. This just wouldn't happen. Yeah, something would happen. They would bring in the goon squad and take him out in the hotel. And I do think that it is now a situation where somebody is going to decide, well, we got to do something here, and they might goon it up a little bit on Curry, and that will, of course, then draw the ire of everyone, and people say, well, you got to protect the league MVP and all that, but no, it is not the opponent's job to protect the league MVP. It's the opponent's job to try to rattle him, and right now he's unrattleable with anything you're doing strategically. Maybe it is a physical blow coming to Curry soon.
Well, we had Doug Christie on the NBA This Week show this past week, and Doug Christie was a hell of a defender in his day for the Sacramento Kings. And I said, how would you guard him? Because if you'd have to play against that team, you would match up with
yeah,
him periodically. And he said, look, you got to pick him up full court. That's first and foremost. You got to ride him up the court and turn him. Not to steal the ball, not to get a steal. He said, but I do that the entire first half because the goal is that he'll miss shots in the fourth quarter because you're going to make him work right in the first half.
Take the legs away.
Doug Christie said, look, you got to hit him. You got to grab him. You got to hold him. I'd get face-to-face with him at times. He wouldn't like it. And the blowback from Warrior fans was just like, oh, so then you're not going to play basketball or that won't work. Look, if you're a great player, it eventually will get back to being physical with you. It has to. They tried to do it with every great player that's ever come down the pike. They're going to have to start doing it with Curry. What I doubt, though, is that the way the NBA is being played right now, I don't even think you can start climbing that ladder of physicality before it gets nipped in the bud. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm not for a cheap shot. I am for bumping and grinding and holding and doing everything you can within the rules to get away with. But I don't know that you can go that route anymore because, you know, you just do one little thing, you're probably looking at a suspension of a game.
Curry's jersey's never untucked, which if you're playing him physically, it's going to come untucked at one point. He hasn't had to tuck his jersey back in once. And, hey, maybe he's intimidating other teams with his own star power. And guess what? That's part of the star equation. So this is, look, it's a new NBA that is set up for this team and this style
really
to
is.
Be wildly successful in. And it's something else. We could wax poetic on Curry all night long, and then the show would get boring. Let's talk about what else was in play tonight. And I thought it's a signature Draymond Green performance in terms of, I don't have it in one category, I'm going to give it to you in other categories. He was just 2-for-9 from the field tonight, 0-for-4 from downtown, and he didn't hit a shot in the two times he took a free throw. He only finished with 4 points. Still, ties Curry for the second best plus-minus tonight. He was plus 19. And when the shot wasn't falling, Matt, what's he do? He boards, he distributes, he defends. 11 rebounds, 9 assists, 3 blocks.
Let me ask you this. When he was at Michigan State, what'd you think?
I thought...
How did you think he'd translate in the NBA, if at all?
I thought he was drafted appropriately. I thought, don't sleep on the Big Ten Player of the Year. He's a more skilled basketball player than any height or measurement will be able to tell you. The Izzo imprinting has to count for something. I've seen that happen too many times. But nobody. I didn't expect this. I didn't expect this for Draymond any more than I expected what Steph is enjoying out of Davidson.
Right.
You can't see this coming. You can't. And, you know, look at all the guys that are such heralded recruits. And the Felipe Lopez's, if I can jog you back from the Wayback Machine.
St. John's.
Yeah. And then, you know, what's his name? Just came out of, big recruit out of UCLA. He got a cup of coffee now with the Timberwolves and all this stuff. Like, all these
Cole
guys.
Levine.
Yeah. You know, all these guys that are supposed to be right. The next whatever rarely are. And the unballyhooed guys turn into something special. I mean, nobody could have expected it. Look, Bob Myers didn't expect
right.
this, so I don't have to apologize for not expecting it either.
I think I told this story. It's kind of a funny story, but you know, I don't watch a lot of college basketball to the NCAA tournament. I prefer the pro game till then. But
sure.
When Draymond was at Michigan State, he went 4 years there, right?
Yeah.
That was the thing.
Yeah.
It was his senior year. I was getting ready for a Warrior game in a visiting hotel somewhere, and I put on a Michigan State game, and I watched about 5-10 minutes of it while I was ironing my clothes. And I was like, this Draymond Green guy, he's interesting. So I talked to a couple guys at the Warriors. I'm like, I was kidding. I said, you guys got to go get Draymond Green. That's the guy. He's incredible. And they were all like, you know what? We like him. He's a nice player. You know, a little undersized, though. We don't know how he's going to translate. Da-da-da. And the funny thing was then, you know, obviously he didn't get drafted to the second round. But the thing I realized is if you look at Michigan State's career numbers, he's at the top of scoring, rebounds, assists, steals, and Michigan State ain't no joke of a school.
Right. You
so that means
you're
this
in the
guy,
record book you played.
Exactly. That means this guy wasn't just an energy guy. It means he was a player. He could do a lot of things. And, you know, he's another guy the Warriors have had, gets into the league and gets better as he continues through the league. Not a lot of teams have players like that.
It's something else.
They got them all
Look at it this way. When I was at Michigan State, their best player, without a doubt, was Sean Respert. And if you ever asked me, who would have been, based on what you saw in college, the better NBA player, I would have put my entire bank account on Respert over Money Green, and couldn't have been more wrong about that.
And I know they're two different players, but both of them battled the undersized. You know, Respert couldn't deal with being an undersized pro.
Right.
Draymond Green has it's fueled his career.
You know what? No one needs to apologize for doubting the ability to hang of a 6'5 front court player in the NBA. You really don't need to. But it's the whole measure the heart, not the guy thing. And we'll be back with more of that right after this. It's the Dubs postgame show. I'm in for Townsend, who joins Matt at 7 o'clock. Until then, Matt's hanging out with me here on 95.7 The Game.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Well, roughly accurate, because with the Warrior game ending and us dedicated to giving you the best Warrior coverage you're going to find on the radio, Matt Stymans and Chris Townsend do the Dubs postgame show when the Dubs game goes final. This is one of those rare occasions where it's going to go final on my watch. So I've already got Matt Stymans hanging out with us here, talking about a 116-99 win for the Warriors over the Hornets. Curry had 40, and it was a walk for this team. He absolutely went bonkers in the third quarter, where he scored not only the team's final 28 points of the third quarter, he had 24 points of the third quarter. He had 28 overall in that quarter. And he was a monster in the third period, where the Warriors outscored Charlotte 33-21. And if you're wondering if Steph Curry was in the locker room making halftime adjustments, no. He was on the court watching his dad get a rocking chair.
Teams need to make adjustments to him. He doesn't need to make adjustments to anybody.
No.
The thing is, with Curry, there's no, how do I want to put this? You can't just give up on him. In other words, I'm not willing. He's the best player in the NBA right now. He's coming off an MVP award, but every player who's ever come down the pike, whether it's, like I said, Chamberlain or Kareem or Jordan, they had to be focused on and the Jordan rules.
Right.
All right. The Jordan rules. The Detroit Pistons had a whole philosophy on how to defend Michael Jordan. Michael Cooper spent his entire career trying to figure out Larry Bird and how to make Larry Bird go to more of his weaknesses than his strengths. LeBron James, I think, has been a guy who's been really, teams have spent a lot of times how to defend this guy. And I just don't think that the league has respected Curry to the point of the guys I've mentioned yet. And maybe the answer is, well, he's not LeBron yet. He's not Michael Jordan. He's not Larry Bird. Well, who is he then right now? I don't know who he is. Look, I'm 50 years old. I saw Kareem. I saw Jordan. I saw Bird. I saw Magic. Would I say that they're better basketball players than Curry? Absolutely. Would I say they're more impactful on a basketball court? That's where I say no.
Right.
They're not. Curry's doing things. Curry's as important on the basketball floor as any of those guys I've mentioned.
Yeah. Well, there is all those stars you just said, not only were they productive, they were wildly entertaining as you were watching their production. And it seemed that other teams were so interested in watching the show, they were unable to either defend it or unwilling to, didn't want to get embarrassed by the guy. I'm sticking with this. Jordan brought the game above the rim like never before. Curry's going to take the game behind the line like never before. And that is what he is doing right now. His real impact on the game of basketball won't be measured in sneaker sales or even like his own titles won for the Warriors. I think we're going to be looking at a world that shoots 40% from downtown in 10, 15 years from now. And it's going to be because this is the guy who sort of changed the way the game was played. We could wax poetic again on Curry all night long. And I know you'll have more with Chris coming up at 7. I want to ask you, because I don't have too much time.
I want to get on that, though, what you just said about Curry, because I think you're absolutely right, is he's revolutionizing the game. For example, and I was saying this the other night, if you're a kid and you're in 9th or 10th grade and you know you're not going to be a big guy, you're not going to be 6'8", 6'7", it doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
If you're 6 foot, 6 feet one, you have more of an advantage to play the game, or you're no less of a disadvantage than a smaller guy as opposed to a big guy. In other words, 6'8", 6 feet, you can be more effective at 6 feet.
Right.
If you're playing outside.
Yeah,
now, if you want to be a 6'8 player and you want to go try to play that game 25, 30 feet from the basket like Curry, go ahead. But you're not going to play it as well as him, because it's just natural for him because he's a guard.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. It really is. Klay Thompson tonight woke up a little bit offensively, went 40% from downtown, finished with 21 points tonight. And I'll tell you, if you offered me this, Curry goes for 40 every night from here on out and take what you get with it, or Curry backs it down to about 32 tonight and Klay shows up as a running mate, I will take that to the bank every single time. He has been the underperforming member of the starting five. And that is, again, another reason why I think this whole thing's so scary here and why I say 75-7 without laughing at myself. This team is 20-0, and Thompson hasn't even started yet.
I know. However, I am of the opinion that if you have guys, quote-unquote, stepping up, it has to come from somewhere. Curry's averaging 8-10 points more than last year. Barnes, I know he's hurt, stepped up his game. Draymond's in more of a... It has to come from somewhere. Otherwise, they're going to score 158 a game.
We got 3 minutes left.
Yeah.
Could Matt Stimons coach this Warrior team to a 55-win record?
Definitely.
I think I could, too.
Oh, my God.
I think I could, too.
I'd rather sub in for Steve Clifford, though, tonight and see if I could stop the Warriors. I mean, I couldn't stop them, but slow them down a little
bit. How would you get out your defensive playbook against this team? It's fascinating.
There's no one way. I mean, like when I tell you what I would do,
Here's how the Warriors are going to lose, Matt. And all of these things are in play in Utah. They're going to be missing a starter at tip-off. They're going to be in a gym that absolutely wants it in front of fans who are into it. They are then going to be in the tight game that doesn't come with the 20-point separation at some point we've become accustomed to, and it'll be a little bit of a grinder. They're going to have their own turnover problems, and then someone at the end, like Bogut did, will foul out when you need him the most. Everything's you got to put into the stew of how the Warriors lose a game was in Utah.
I would agree with that. You know what I think it's going to take? The only teams that can beat the Golden State Warriors, this is going to sound obvious, but you better have talent. I think there's four teams that can beat the Warriors: Cleveland, the Spurs, the Thunder, and I know they've handled the Clippers, and they own the Clippers
still
right
on
now.
The list.
They are still on the list to me because they're not going to get played against till later in the season. Look, Cleveland's got three big boys, all right? They got LeBron, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love. All right, so that team gives you a chance. The Thunder, they got Westbrook, Ibaka, and Durant. All right, those are big-time players. They have a chance. The Spurs, they got Aldridge, they got Kawhi Leonard. They still got their big three who maybe form one really good player. They have a chance. But a team like Charlotte that's rolling Kemba Walker out there and Spencer Hawes, they can't do it. They're not going to be able to do it. I think that's one thing we're finding out.
You know who's got a little bit of talent? Toronto. Backcourt talent. And Lowry and DeRozan. And I'm not surprised that they gave this. I'll tell you what. Lowry and DeRozan gassing the Warriors for the back-to-back in Brooklyn. I'm circling that.
That is a possibility. I think if that game were Brooklyn then Toronto, the Warriors would be in a little more danger. But, you know, I guess the Warriors are staying over in Charlotte, then they're going to Toronto on Friday.
Yeah, I think they're all going to the Currys for a little picnic or something tonight. Hey, we got to wrap things up here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I completely monopolized our time together.
Dude,
we didn't take
even
any calls. Matt and Chris will be taking calls from you Warrior fans about this game. I'm sure as soon as Chris walks in here at the top of the hour to continue the Dubs post-game show with Matt Stimons. But it was great seeing you.
Yes, sir.
A little extended Steiny interview here. You're off on Friday now. No, you're still on. Sam Amick, thank you. Trey Wingo, thank you. Nate Burleson, thank you. Gianna, thank you. Button Vixen, thank you. Sonoma Tucky, thank you. Spencer for Hire, gone. Thank him, too. No Man Bun's a shame for anybody. Danny, nice haircut. Good job. Better than Jeremy Lin's, anyways. Jeez, what is that? Thank you so much for tuning in. Townie, Steiny, continue Dubs postgame right after this. Until then, please do remember, sports don't build character, they reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.